Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Put Your Chainsaw Down and Pay Attention. Welcome to issue 155 of the Bugle, audio newspaper for this most visual of all worlds, the podcast described by none other than Stevie Wonder as both the sunshine of his life and the apple of his eye. As long ago as 1973 as well. That tells you something about this podcast. I'm Andy Zaltzman, direct descendant of Jupiter, king of Olympus. Hang on, that's not right. Direct descendant of Zach Zaltzman, my dad. And I'm in London. You should come here if you've not been, it's all right. And in New York City, it's Lance Corporal Laughter himself, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Buglers. Did Jupiter ever take that paternity test, though, Andy?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, but he should do.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've got to get him onto a reality TV daytime show, Andy, and get Jupiter to take a test.
If all the stories are to be believed, which they're not, then he spread his love, arguably a little too wide.
Andy, on Sunday, I did a benefit gig for a children's museum here in New York, and, you know, different heckles are always special, stick in your head, and this gig produced a real doozy. It was already quite a strange occasion. Most of the gig was bands, never a good sign for a comedian, and was being emceed by Ad Rock from the Beastie Boys. But there were also a bunch of children wandering around, you know, because I guess it was their museum. I don't think they were high-end donors. And they was really enjoying the gig, dancing around to the music, and seemed to enjoy listening to me a lot less. And one kid, at one point during my gig, he walked to the front of the crowd. He glared at me with real fury in his tiny face, then pulled his T-shirt over his head and walked away. That's pretty demonstrable contempt, Andy. It's hard to spin that as a compliment, you little shit.
Was it the Lou Reed gig?
No, that was on Friday.
Oh, how was
and
that?
The Lou Reed gig, well, it was great. The gig was great. Yeah. And I remembered all my Spanish lines, and I danced as well.
Oh, yeah.
Remember last week I'd said, I think Lou Reed is, you know, if he doesn't do a dark story, it'll be a waste.
Yeah.
Not only did he do a dark, he brought his own story. I think he slightly misjudged what the story pirates are about. And, you know, because it's about, you know, you put on these shows that kids write, and it's fun and joyful. And he did something that was dark. It was really dark. And, you know, for that evening, it was inappropriate, Andy.
Right.
Too dark.
Right.
No, for a middle track on a Velvet Underground album, that is the time and the place.
Did you speak to me about the dog puns? That's what I want to know.
Did you tell him that he was
the creative spring for one of the world's most iconic pieces of modern comedy?
I was too mad with him because of it.
So, this is Bugle 155. 155, of course, the number of different names suggested at a board meeting before the Pemberton Chemical Company finally settled on the name Coca-Cola. Back in the 1880s, these included Funky Frank's Fruity Fun Fizz, Death Sludge Mayhem, Tea, that was already taken, and the Old Bubbly Bastard. And this is the Bugle for the week beginning Monday.
I'll have a whiskey and Old Bubbly Bastard, please.
Different times then, they weren't so.
Yeah.
You could be a bit more creative with your brands then. Monday, the 30th of May, 2011. This is the week that this Bugle is for, meaning it's exactly 580 years to the second, John, since one of the all time greats, English pranks, a fancy dress barbecue in the French town of Rouen. And one little French lass, Joan of Arc, misunderstood the invite, thinking that she was supposed to turn up in fancy dress, whereas in fact it was the food that was in fancy dress. Hamburgers in Roman centurion outfits, sweet corn dressed as Vikings, chicken nuggets that looked like Mexican Zapatistas, the works, and little Joan of Arc turned up herself dressed as a sausage, and the rest is extremely overcooked history, with Joan becoming a very literal hottie. She died with the final defiant words, "You guys have really ruined my day." Oh, come on, that deserved more. I'm on fire.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. No. This isn't going anywhere, is it, Andy?
No, it's not. But,
oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
I can't guarantee that other things won't go somewhere later in this podcast.
Oh, no. Top story this week, an American president in London. And, Andy, President Obama is like Def Leppard at the moment. He's on a massive European tour. And judging by the newspaper reviews, he's rocking the shit out of it.
And he's got a drummer with one arm.
Attempting to, in the words of the Great Leopard, take the relationship between America and Europe and pour some sugar on it! And the media always going to have varying takes on
Do you know that song, the origins of that song, John? It was...
I don't, Andy.
Advertising jingle for a wheat-based cereal.
Anyway, really?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, because they might want to. Yeah, that's a very interesting take.
Yep.
Def Leppard might have been a good jingle writer for Old Bubbly Bastard as well. Especially if they wanted to come up with like a cherry Old Bubbly Bastard line, or diet Old Bubbly Bastard for the ladies. But I will say, Andy, that my reaction to this trip in general, my point of view, the big takeaway from it is that. The Queen is on fire at the moment, Andy. Just when you write Big Liz off, she comes back at you hard. She's like a Mexican boxer. She can take a metaphorical punch to the face. 2001 has been a vintage year for the Queen machine. First,
that was this is 2011, John.
Yeah,
That's 2001.
Did I just say 2001?
You did, mate. You did,
2011 has been a vintage year.
Yeah,
for the
that's
Queen
much
machine.
Better, mate. That's much better. So you gave me the creeps there. You thought I thought I was supposed to do my debut Edinburgh solo show, and was woefully unprepared. Whereas in fact, I'm merely woefully unprepared for for this year's one.
First, she had the royal wedding that not only blew the world's mind, but also unleashed Pippa Middleton's A-bomb on the planet. And in fact, just like the literal A-bomb, Andy, Pippa's posterior is really supposed to be only used as a global deterrent. Don't try anything stupid or we'll detonate it again. Last time we set it off, 2 days later, Bin Laden was dead. Coincidence? I dare you to find out. Then, there was the island tour last week where the Queen struck such a perfect balance, no one seemed sure whether she actually apologised or not. And now... she's making the President of the United States come and have dinner with her. She's never been more relevant, Andy. She's back on the world stage again.
Yeah, but you say that, John, but her having dinner with the President pretty much thrust our two countries back to the brink of war, John. Because after a long period in which your and my countries, Britain and America, have have got on quite well, gone on a load of exciting overseas expeditions together and stuff, we are... Yeah. On the precipice of mutual destruction, John, because your self-styled president, Barack Hussein Obama, perpetrated the ultimate insult to my proud nation. He spoke during the national anthem, John.
He did.
You cannot do that. The problem is an overeager band cracked into the Queen's theme tune, and Obama just kept on crapping on about, I don't know, how to make the world a better place or some shit like that. And the world's most important and inviolable song, a song that expresses the thoughts and desires that beat in every British heart. I really hope a pretend man I don't believe in goes out of his way to look after a very rich old lady who's already probably got private healthcare, her own personal trainer, and a pretty decent intruder alarm system in her house. But anyway, he talked right over that, John. He talked right over the Queen's song. And there was a look on her face as he did so. As he did so, when look on the face of Her Majesty... who is pretty much as majestic as you could expect an 85-year-old granny to be. But there was the look on her face was priceless. Her eyes kind of flickered left and right in confusion, and she seemed to be on the point of saying, what the f*** is this, Big Horse? Are you trying to rap over my song? Are you remixing my jingle? And it's not the first time the Obamas have caused mayhem in the British Constitution,
it's
John.
It's true.
Because last time, Michelle Obama... she went right up and cuddled the Queen, and I believe whispered in her ear, come on, tell Michio what the matter is, baby. And, of course, cuddling the Queen is a definite risk, bearing in mind what happened when the Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating copped a fondle of the Queen's arse in the 1990s, of course led to an unreported nuclear strike on the city of Canberra. And Keating spending the rest of his life in solitary confinement in a jail on the Outer Hebridean island of Whack. Anyway, that's all fact.
Yeah, Michelle, you're right. She attracted real criticism last time for putting her arm around the Queen during a photograph when protocol clearly dictates that, and I quote, you don't touch the f***ing Queen! It's the first of three key rules, Andy. You don't touch her, you don't spill water on her, and you don't feed her after midnight. Actually, I think those last two rules might be for gremlins. I always get the two confused.
Oh, but it's true that the Queen has got a coating of cesium, so if she's exposed to water, she gets pretty explosive.
But yeah, for those Americans that maybe weren't aware that there has been this huge problem this week because America, unlike Britain, hasn't had its streets on fire all week, President Obama slightly mistimed his toast to the Queen. He opened with "To the Queen," which was the cue for the band to start playing the national anthem, only to then try and shout the rest of his toast over the top of it. It was classic slapstick, Andy. It was like something out of a Naked Gun movie, but without Leslie Nielsen punching the Queen in the face. And as is tradition, after a protocol infraction like that, the Queen will now retaliate to tally the score and thus restore diplomatic relations between the two countries to its previous state, which means that the Queen will now travel to America, where she will loudly talk over the playing of the Star-Spangled Banner. And Buckingham Palace has announced that the national anthem in question is going to be just before a San Diego Padres game, and that the Queen will shout Delia Smith's recipe for banoffee pudding over the top of it before demurely travelling back to London. President Obama delivered a key speech to both houses of parliament in Westminster Hall, where he said that the special relationship between the two nations was founded not only on a shared history and language, but common beliefs and values that have united our people throughout the ages. Going on to say under his breath, apart from that whole War of Independence thing where we'd rather have been dead than have anything to do with you, but apart from that, you guys are the best.
He did reference that in one of the things I saw him say. He was saying that our relationship got off... I can't remember exactly what he said, but he made some quip about the tea. But,
whoa.
Yeah.
He made a quip about the... Is that still f***ing funny to him, Andy? I'm glad he thinks it's so amusing now.
Yeah, well, he can do that because he's not a real American, is he, John?
Yeah, oh, I guess that's it. Yeah. I guess that's it.
He's from Kenya, Indonesia or something, isn't he?
Hawaiian, Kenya, Indonesia. He also said that the UK and the US are at a pivotal moment in their relationship and that profound challenges lie ahead. That's suspiciously vague, Andy. That sounds less like a speech and more like a horoscope. Profound challenges lie ahead. I think he forgot to write a speech until the last minute and was reading pieces of paper that he was frantically pulling out of fortune cookies. Britain and the US should look to the lucky number 7. When stress is around, try and see positive in the actions of others. Tuesday might be a good day to try a new venture. To the Queen. Oh, one more thing. Oh, shit, not again!
But, so yeah, big Billy President gave a nice little speech in which he said something along the lines of, good things are good, bad things are bad, we both like good things, and we both dislike bad things. Hooray, let's fill in the details later. And got big standing ovations, big props from the reviewers, and it's certainly true that he knows one end of a sentence from another. But there seems to be some dispute over how to get the world out of the financial mess that it's in. But both him and David Cameron, they said they want to achieve sustainable growth without leaving a mountain of debt for future generations. And this, to me, John, is naive and unnecessary. Because tell me, John, what is wrong with piling up debt for our children and our children's children and our children's children's children, assuming the Human Rights Brigade have not outlawed humping by then, of course. Because what is wrong with that? Why can't they just pile it up for their children and their children's children and their children's children's children, safe in the knowledge that one day, inevitably, the world will end, and then we'll basically have got the whole of planet Earth for free. It's a f***ing bargain, John. That's basically how top-level economics has been working for the last 25 years.
Right,
you've just got to have the bare-faced balls to see it through.
Yeah, until the planet as a whole declares an explosive bankruptcy. One of the more eye-catching events during the trip was the two first ladies hosting a barbecue in the back of Downing Street. That's a phenomenal idea, Andy. And again, I think the Queen missed a step there and she should do that in the future. Put her Kiss the Cook apron on, stand behind a grill asking heads of state how they like their burgers done. Medium well coming up for Prince Albert of Monaco. Actually, give it a couple of minutes, one thinks it's still a little pink.
But there's a great photo in the paper of David Cameron attempting to serve a sausage with a look on his face of kind of disgust and confusion, as if to say, oh my God, is this what the riffraff eat nowadays?
Also, the President, David Cameron, had a game of table tennis in South London. They played doubles, against two school kids. And that seems like a cop-out, Andy, to be on the same team. I think they should have played against each other. Putin would have done that, and he'd have done it with his shirt off. Now, one report of the game said the president's competitive streak quickly came into full relief, sighing when they missed points, high-fiving when they scored, and making excuses when the ball fell just short of the table. Tennis is a sport, Obama said, trying to comfort Cameron on one of his missed shots. Well, I wish he'd gone further than that, Andy. Just screamed, come on, David, get your f***ing head in the game. Paddle up, Cameron, I came here to ping pong.
Obama also received a lot of attention for telling a joke in his speech that went down very well here when he was speaking in the historic venue, Westminster Hall, and said the last three speakers here were the Pope, Her Majesty the Queen, and Nelson Mandela. That's either a very high bar or the start of a very funny joke. And of course, we can now reveal it was in fact both. And we can also exclusively reveal that that funny joke was this. The Pope, the Queen, and Nelson Mandela walked into a pub, and the barman says, how come only two of you are wearing stupid hats? And the Pope says, because only me and the Sheila were chosen by God to do our jobs, and Nelly left his cycle helmet on the bus. No, it wasn't that. No, it wasn't. Sorry, it was a different. It was a different joke. Okay, the Pope, the Queen, and Nelson Mandela walked into a pub. Oh no, hang on, What is the similarity between the Pope, the Queen, and Nelson Mandela? One spent an involuntary sabbatical on Robben Island. One's great great grandmother spent most of the 19th century robbing Ireland, and the other one's priests' roving eyes land them in trouble. Sorry, You might have seen that one coming. Bit of a pun about papal clothing there. You might have seen... But don't get cross.
No.
It wasn't my joke anyway. I stole it. But it's got a nice ring to it, so I thought I'd regale you with it anyway. And fanon pun aficionados. Fanon is a type of clothes worn by a priest. Uh-huh. Your complaints just sound like dogs barking to me. Go away and chase your ball. Chase your ball. That's another bit of clothing. Careful what you say. You better rotch it. But, mate, maybe you thought that joke was surplus to requirements. There you go. There's another one.
I've been out for a couple of minutes.
Yep. And yes, some of my jokes might be a bit hit amiss. But when it comes to jokes about priestly clothing, I'll be the judge of what's funny. You go screw yourselves. If you don't like it, you can sock my... Never mind. Bear that kinked you into touch. Sorry, it's just I can't cope anymore. I admit that. It's a bad habit. So I'll shed a tear and I'll shed a tiara and then I'll think about what I've done. Then I'll man up. I'll talk it through with John. That's another. Oh, apparently I've gone on too long. I bet you're all cross now. Don't worry. It's coming to an end now. But I spent a lot of time on this bit. Big time investment. And anyway, my shrink says I've got to do one of my pun runs every 20 bugles or so, or I'll get withdrawal symptoms. Yep. This is my crucial fix. Sorry, it's all done now. I suppose you'll have a liturgy.
Is it over yet, Andy? Yeah, because done. I'm not coming right. back until you promise it's
okay.
done.
It's done. You've probably got a liturgy of complaints about it, but... I don't know if some of you find the pun difficult, pontifical, but anyway. Over to you, Christ, to deal with those. Eucharist? Eucharist,
Don't look at me.
Sorry, what a mess.
Against all my better instincts, Andy, I'm coming back.
Right.
Every beat of my heart tells me to just run into the road.
I'm probably clean for a couple of months now.
A pun run is your methadone, isn't it, Andy?
What's his heroin, then? No, actually, don't answer.
Heroin is his heroin, Chris.
Obama has left Britain now to go to the G8 summits in France, and later on in the show we'll be telling you why in a world set to be increasingly shaped by China, India, Brazil and other emerging economies, in which the Arab world is in a state of revolt against the status quo, the leaders of Europe and America at the very forefront of humping global economy to the very brink of catastrophe and beyond, and the corrupt remnants of the Soviet Empire are sitting around having a chinwag about stuff in a nice little town in France. The G8, of course, John, looks like Warren G. Snooker has hit the skid since the G20 summit. If I may recall one of your finest jokes.
Oh, Warren G. just running out of position there. But he's tucked up safely behind the green. Right. Runaway Serb news now! And if you're one of those people that buys cartons of milk with the photographs of missing European war criminals on the back, then one face in particular has been staring at you over your cornflakes over the last decade. Ratko Mladic. But no more. Ratko has thankfully been found and returned to the loving arms of the War Crimes Tribunal at The Hague. Such a heartwarming story, Andy. Yeah. They're so glad he's back.
That's right. The man named after his father's pest control business has ironically himself been caught. And like a freshly trapped household rodent, now faces being extradited to the back garden or The Hague and smashed on the head with a brick or prosecuted for 15 counts of war crimes. So, but let's not assume the man is guilty, John, before due legal process has been carried out.
I guess
he doesn't look good. Parading around, glorying in your own brutality for most of the early 1990s does raise a few question marks about the man. But, and I guess even the most ardent Ratko fans would have to admit that his behaviour has been at best poor and certainly pretty questionable. But he has passed a fitness test and is fit to be extradited to face justice for some of the most abominable actions of the late 20th century.
One thing's for sure, Andy, international fugitives are having a bad, bad year, 2011. Bin Laden, now this, 16 years on the run for Mladic, Andy. Well, not so much on the run as living in Serbia the whole time without really being bothered by the Serbian authorities. It wasn't even 16 years on the jog, Andy. It was more 16 years on the pleasant afternoon stroll.
And on the running machine. On the treadmill. On a slow-moving treadmill.
16 years on the treadmill. He faces accusations including a genocide charge over the killing of about 7,500 Bosnian Muslim men and boys at Srebrenica in 1995. Good luck OJing your way out of that one, Ratko. Lightning is going to have to strike 7,500 times in the same place for you to dodge this one.
But as you say, it's amazing. Since the royal wedding, John, it's just been one unending festival of killing or capturing the world's most wanted men. First Bin Laden, then Ryan Giggs, and now Ratko Mladic. What when the magic wears off, though, John? I mean, that's... I think William and Kate are going to have to divorce and remarry at least once every 2 months just to keep the world safe.
Well... you know why I'd be happy about that idea. Oh. Detonate the A-bomb, someone get the codes. Apparently, Mladic was living under an assumed name in a small village in northern Serbia. Apparently he was not in disguise and was very cooperative. So, no disguise, Andy. I've got to say that's slightly disappointing. Pretty low-grade effort from the sulky Serb there. I suppose, to be fair to him, Radovan Karadzic had set the bar pretty high with his herbal medicine Santa Claus costume. But if Mladic had put half as much effort into disguising himself as he put into slaughtering innocent people, he might still be on the loose today. This is undoubtedly a big moment for the Serbian people, who've not only been waiting 16 years for this, but who've also had to suffer through him living quite openly in Serbia, especially in... until as late as 2001, eating in expensive restaurants, even attending football matches, even signing autobiographies called I Am Ratko Mladic by the actual Ratko Mladic. But perhaps the most infuriating moment was in 2009 when a bunch of home videos emerged of him. In these videos he was singing, dancing, drinking, playing table tennis and even taking part in snowball fights. And it really has been a big week for the sport of ping pong, Andy. That just shows that you can have good and bad publicity. They've got both the President of the United States and a Serbian war criminal both on tape enjoying the sport. I guess it supports their claim that table tennis really is for everyone, Andy. Whether you're a democratically elected head of state or a tyrannical military leader who is responsible for the Srebrenica massacre. It's just a fun game.
Some more details have emerged of the life led by the Belgrade bastard, the Serbian shitbag, the Yugoslav, you go f*** yourself.
Oh, very good.
He apparently used to own a goat called Madeleine Albright. Did you read this?
Now, please, that's not true, is it?
This is true, yeah. Well, I mean, we've all been there, but...
I'm Googling.
Yeah, he apparently named all of his goats after the Western leaders who confronted him during the war. And it's not entirely clear why, unless he was pretty abusive to those goats. Maybe he just wanted to wean himself off goat's cheese. You know, I can't eat this, it's come straight out of Madeleine Albright's udders. Well, I guess that's going to put you off your lunch. But it's true. Have you found it?
That is weird.
Yeah.
Queen of America news now. And one of the most watched programmes in US television history, Andy, the Oprah Winfrey Show, ended this Wednesday after 25 short years. It finished with a bang, with a three-show finale on TV that ranks amongst the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen on television. And I have seen a man staple his own scrotum to a piece of wood. Yeah, it was an episode of Jackass when I saw that happen. I remember thinking, right. Well, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen on TV.
You weren't watching the live House of Lords feed on BBC Parliament.
I'm telling you, stop talking or I'll do it.
Well, it was a debate about basic health and safety in DIY stores. And Lord...
Do's and don'ts.
Yep, Lord Sevenoaks is merely illustrating the dangers of having nails and planks available to the general public. It's all in Hansard, John. It's all in Hansard.
The first two of the three farewell shows were in a basketball arena in Chicago and featured a parade of the world's biggest stars turning up to pay homage to Caesar. And the atmosphere was incredible. People absolutely losing their minds. It's as close as we've ever been, I think, to ancient Rome. And it's hard to quantify exactly how much power Oprah has. But let me put it like this. If she had ended her final programme on Wednesday telling her viewers to go outside and kill the first person they see, there would have been a f***ing bloodbath across America. If she brought someone onto the stage in the arena show, thrown them into the middle of the crowd and said, eat them, the crowd would not have waited for the barbecue sauce to get dropped from the ceiling. The final show, Andy, was just an hour of her talking about her career and her philosophies on life for 60 minutes. And now, I think it showed a key difference between English people and American people in terms of how much sincerity they can take. Because much of what Oprah's show has done has indeed been incredible over the years. And her audience sat there and listened to this and lapped the speech up for, like I say, an hour, a whole hour of listening to it. And I really think that after 42 minutes of that kind of heartfelt soliloquy in front of an English audience, someone in the crowd would have piped up and said, OK, we get it, shut the f*** up! If you're not going to give each of us a car, just shut the f*** up and let us leave! There would have been an awkward silence, and then someone else would have stood up and said, well, I disagree with how they said it, Oprah, but I cannot disagree with what they said. Seriously, are we getting a car or not?
So now, time for the Bugle feature section. That's something from the Bugle archives. And when I say archives, it's from last week, and we've saved it for this week. And I had to leave last week's recording early because I had an extremely pressing date going to see the mighty Harlequins become the greatest rugby team in the world by winning a second-tier cup tournament. But it was quite exciting, and I did lose my shit a bit. But anyway, while I was gone, John did a very special feature section. John, tell our listeners all about it.
Well, Andy, you know, last week, just as you left, I was getting ready to pack up, and I heard this explosion outside and a scuffle, and then this engine, and I thought, well, what's that engine? I can't quite place it. It doesn't sound like a car. It doesn't sound like a tank. It sounds like someone driving a jet ski down the centre of a concreted road. Next thing I knew, there was a smoke canister that flew into the studio and the sound of an electric guitar being played. And this conversation is basically a result of what happened over the next 10 minutes. Please be upstanding for the American!
Yeah. Right. Nice to come back finally, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's been a while, American, hasn't it?
Well, you know, I've been busy. I've been doing a lot of stuff out there. I'm on the I'm on the tweets now. I'm doing a lot of the tweeting.
You said that last time. You were plugging your tweeting last time.
I don't know if I was plugging it as much. I was just letting everybody know I'm out there. You know, you want to hear my voice more often. I'm at Bugles American.
Yeah.
You know, at Bugles American.
You literally just defined plugging there.
Bugles American, all one word, at Bugles American.
Okay.
But you know, it's not self-promotion. It's more about just getting my word out to people. So if I want to sell books and things, you know, they know where to come.
Again, you are defining... You're defining plugging. That is exactly what self-promotion is.
Yeah, I actually disagree, but I don't want to get into a debate.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here. This has been a key month or so for America.
Oh, I mean, one of the best months probably in the history of the entire country, other than when we freaking banged your king around a couple years ago, huh?
Well, okay, I'm not going to rise to that. The fact is...
Ted Lee Tea over the ocean.
Yeah,
there.
Okay. That was a long time ago.
Good week, though.
It was... I'm sure for American... You know what? That was a good week for England anyway, because we wanted to concentrate on our battles to the east.
On losing. Listen, I'll tell you something funny. If VH1 was around during that, they would have had the best week ever. That would definitely have made the show, right?
The point is you killed Bin Laden.
Oh, we sure did.
And how did that... Where were you when you found out about the death of Bin Laden?
I can't tell you exactly where it was, because, you know... I was kind of in an undisclosed top secret location. I don't want to say I'm a member of SEAL Team 6, but let's just say I, you know, maybe helped coordinate somebody, the assault. That went on.
Okay.
Well, I had written.
Is that true?
I'd written an article about, for my blog about, you know, it would be cool if like Navy SEALs killed them and stuff, so I felt like maybe they grabbed that and used it. I wrote it a couple of years ago, you know, I was saying, oh, why don't we just have Navy SEALs kill them? And then, I don't know, like 7 years later, like Navy SEALs went in and killed them, so it felt a little bit like they had used my stuff, the military, and, you know, our government, obviously it's on the house, you know, no charge, like I kind of came up with the plan. I'm not going to, like, get into a whole thing with the president and, you know, those guys. I'm just
you're not going to sue them for copyright infringement?
Nah, I can't. I mean, how can I sue the best, you know, the best?
Well, that's very generous.
I'm not
going to
take
you.
Money out of the mouths of Navy SEALs kids. You know what I mean? I'm just not that kind of person.
That's very generous of you.
I don't club Navy SEALs, you know?
I would have bet all the money I had available to me that there would have been some jet ski involvement in your celebration. Was there not?
Well, the problem was the announcement was so late.
Yes.
That to get to my jet ski and get it in the water to do like a celebratory lap around the Statue of Liberty, it was just too late. So the next day, I just took it up upon myself to do it the next day. And the first thing in the morning, 6, 7 a.m., I was up and I was ripping around Lady Liberty, spraying up my
I read pan. About that because that's a major shipping route.
And you're also not allowed to do it.
You're not allowed to do it, and you were unloading a firearm in the air at the time.
Well, it wasn't, you know, I want to say it was blanks. They weren't blanks. That's what I told the cops.
Okay.
God bless the NYPD and the Harbor Patrol because they went easy on me. But look, what am I supposed to do? Like, if you own...
I think not do it. That's what you're supposed to do.
Listen, you own an assault rifle and a jet ski and you killed Bin Laden. How do you not take a lap around the Statue of Liberty and just start firing rounds into the air? I mean, it's probably the dumbest... It's probably stupid not to do it. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you can only get one chance at that. I'm glad I did.
Okay.
I'm glad I did. No regret. I mean, what's one night in jail for America, you know?
Now let's turn to a lighter subject now. I'm sure, listen, this is something that obviously has been a slight embarrassment to people in England, but the royal wedding, that must have been something you got.
Yeah, I have to tell you, like, in my entire life, I have never seen a display of people and a situation that has honestly just made my heart melt more than that. Here's the thing.
So you enjoyed it?
Well, this is what's odd. I had, you know, I woke up at 3:30 to watch it just because out of curiosity.
God.
You know what I mean? I set my alarm because I like to write. You know, I tweet and stuff, and I was going to tweet about it. I was going to live tweet it.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people want to know.
Please don't say that
what I think
anymore.
About it.
Yeah.
And but then, you know, I'm sitting there and I see the people and I see this Kate Middletown and man, geez, I mean, my heart just melts. And as a child, you know, I had my tear ducts removed because my dad was like, well, what's the point? You know, you don't need to cry.
Yeah.
So I couldn't, you know, emote what I call like a the salty discharge from my eyes. But I would have, you know, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
I mean, it seems so real to me. You know, it seemed like it's so rare you see love on television that's real.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes on like the Real Housewives of Jersey, I guess, but like other than that.
Did you not find it slightly ridiculous?
No, it was beautiful. I mean, think about it. Royalty. I mean, we don't have, God bless us for not having a king and queen.
But, yeah.
And, you know, we hated them back in the day. Like, that's why we started this country, because we hated that. But now it's like, oh, yeah, it is beautiful.
See, it is beautiful. It sounds to me like there's some regret now that maybe there was that war of independence. That could have been your wedding.
I don't like the idea of having somebody in charge of me who wears a crown because it's a little gay.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But as far as just love is concerned, I think it's a beautiful thing. And it's something about the fact that they have all that money and then they spend it on, like, the wedding. It's beautiful, you know, and it just, it makes sense to me.
American, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Yeah, listen, I just want to say real quick again, I'm working with some people, Bugles, at Bugles American.
Oh,
you know,
I'm
going to have some stuff coming out soon, a book. It's called
a book.
Yeah,
you're writing a book.
Well, ghostwriting it right now.
Is it about how you basically ordered the assassination of Osama bin Laden?
Well, it's a lot of it is about how I had a lot of the ideas for a lot of the stuff we did before we did them, and it's called You Can't Copyright Greatness. And so it's just a list. It's just basically a list of my ideas. Some of them are just on paper. Right now, I'm self-publishing, meaning like just, you know, I'm going to the library and Xeroxing a lot of stuff. But Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be good. And you'll hear a lot of what I would call my future ideas about things, about how to clean up the streets. You know,
okay.
There's a chapter called Vigilante Justice. It's called Take Back the Streets.
Okay.
You know,
that sounds like breaking federal laws.
Somebody says, give me your money. And I said, I got a better idea. Get on the floor, citizens arrest. You know, I got a better idea. Oh, that's a nice gun. How about this gun? Right? You want to have a shootout on the street? Because the Old West, you needed people in the Old West to clean up the streets.
I think
who were as bad as the guys who were making the streets dirty.
I think most police officers would advise against that kind of behavior.
Well, they would on paper, sure, but you get to know these guys the way I do. You know, you spend a little time down at the precinct, like I have. You talk to these guys
after being arrested for jet ski firearm infractions
or whatever. You know, and sometimes that, sometimes something else.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes urinating behind a dumpster or, you know, of a 7-Eleven at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Whatever it is.
In the after, I thought you were going to say morning. I swear, I thought you were going to say 2 in the morning there.
Yeah, well, you don't get caught at 2 in the morning,
right?
You know, because it's nighttime. But anyways, there's a lot of tips on living in life. You know, it's kind of like, you know, me 101. Like, Trump's got his book on 101.
Yeah.
I kind of took some of that and repurposed it for, the, you know, for me.
Wow. Great to have him back, John. After, it's been a long time, hasn't it? It's been a long time since the American was last...
it has.
Able. He's basically been strapped himself to Mount Rushmore for about a year, hasn't he? Where he belongs.
Well, he strapped himself to Mount Rushmore in the hope that someone would just carve around him.
Your emails now, and this one comes from Harry Diantis, who writes, Dear Chris, John and Andy, in order that you're likely to read this, if at all, I've recently come across a tank for sale on Amazon. I thought it should be the official vehicle of the Bugle, if only in spirit. When the Buglers eventually rise up and claim the world as our own, what better vehicles to use than the Badonkadonk tanks? Truly a tank for the 21st century. And there it is on Amazon. The Badonkadonk tank.
The JL-421 Badonkadonk Land Cruiser tank. It says currently unavailable. I'm guessing that means they're trying to play hardball. But the product description is sensational. It says... The JL-421 Badonkadonk is a completely unique, extremely rare land vehicle and battle tank. designed with versatility in mind, the donk can transport cargo or a crew of five internally or on the roof, and can be piloted from within the armoured shell or from an exposed standing position through the hatch. Thanks to a special one-way steel mesh armour window and a control stick that pivots up and down to allow piloting from the... standing or seated positions. Oh, this thing is phenomenal.
A 400-watt premium sound system with PA.
is mounted to project sound both into the cabin and outwards from behind the windows. That's nice to have. It's got turn signal lights, trim lighting, underbody lighting, fixed slats protecting the windows. The Donk has a top speed of 40 miles per hour, Andy, and the vehicle is not licensed for use on public roads. Doesn't matter. You just drive anyway. What are they going to do? How are they going to stop you? Outstanding. And what you really want to do is then scroll down to the customer reviews. Where it's something's happened which makes you glad that you belong to the human race. Because I don't see gerbils or lions or sharks wasting their time like this. I don't see them doing it.
I mean, it actually exists as well.
The first one is finally a tank you can trust. It doesn't really exist, does it?
It does. Yeah, someone's made it, I think, and has posted it for sale at $20,000.
Oh, that's great.
Do you think we've got enough listener goodwill to like post your fundraising thing to actually get this?
I'm telling you, Matilda's going to have to take a year off next year. Yeah. We're buying a tank.
There's seven billion buglers out there potentially.
Yeah.
So they don't need to give that much to raise the $20,000 to buy the Badonkadonk.
Look at these customer reviews, Andy. 5 stars. Finally a tank you can trust. Someone says, I admit it, shopping for a personal tank can be a bit daunting. Next one. 1 star. Easily blown to Kingdom Come.
Recommended only for use against Lithuanians.
Someone. 2 stars. The Donk is okay, but not recommended for a drunken rampage.
So, congratulations to whoever made this and the people who've reacted to it.
In the appropriate way. Well done. Oh.
Two stars.
Don't buy it. I recently purchased the JL421 Badonkadonk Land Cruiser for some light interplanetary conquest, and I must say I'm disappointed. 4 stars here. Under the title, Donklets, Oh My God, Cute Overload. From the first time I saw the Donk cruising the bubble with the bass bumping, I knew I needed one. What I didn't anticipate is that when I finally got mine, it was pregnant. And it would soon give host to a pod of bouncing, bumping Donklets. Well done, everyone.
And thank you, Harry Diantis, for alerting us to this. Anyway, John, I've got to go. I've got to go and do a gig in Cambridge, your old stamping ground. So, buglers, do come along to the gig. It's this Friday, 7:45 kickoff, I think. So, probably sometime after you've been able to download this. Sometime before. So, if you can travel back in time and come and bump out, it'll probably be a pretty f***ing sparse crowd. That'd be great.
Where are you doing the gig, Andy? Where is it in Cambridge?
The Junction, mate.
Oh, nice. That is a big venue.
Is it?
Yeah, that's a big venue, Andy.
Big and echoey, I'm imagining, tonight.
Yeah, well, have a great gig, Andy.
Me and Antopolsky have not exactly been packing them out, so... But thanks to those of you who have come.
Outstanding, Bill.
Anyway, that's it, buglers. I've got to go. I've got some sport for you. You can wait till next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye, buglers. Have a tremendous week.